The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I want to talk a little bit about what happened in Washington, D.C. overnight. This crash between a passenger plane and a Black Hawk helicopter. Donald Trump, the president, is holding a news conference as we speak. As soon as we get any detail from that, we will bring it to you. Victoria Jones is with me, though. Victoria is the chief Washington analyst at D.C. Radio Company. Victoria, what's the latest? What can you tell us?
Well, as far as we know, there are no survivors from the crash. One interesting piece of information, this was between a passenger plane coming from Wichita, Kansas, into Washington Reagan National Airport, which many of your listeners will know is right next to Washington, D.C., and an Army Black Hawk helicopter, which was on what they're calling a routine training mission at night. And the plane had been given permission to land, and so it was coming in on its last descent, was just a few hundred feet above the ground. And the air traffic controllers had told the Black Hawk helicopter to come in behind the plane. It had been told to come in behind the plane, and then it was told to land. And that did not happen. Now, an Army official has said that they cannot confirm the helicopter crew was wearing night vision goggles at the time of the crash. But earlier, the defense secretary, the new defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, said in a recorded message that they had them on them. So we do not know the truth of that. And that's important.
We have a little clip. This is the moment right before the collision happened. Take a listen.
American 472, my bad number and visual.
American 472, Washington, 1-star, 3-2-0-1-7.
Howard, did you see that?
American 472, American 3130, go around, turn left in, 250, climb in, 3000.
Give us in, 350, 3000, American 3130.
Tower, Blue Streak, 5347 is on final. Request runway 33, circle to 33.
Take a heading for American 3130.
So that was air traffic control liaising with plane and helicopter. Matthew Cappucci is with us as well, senior meteorologist and an atmospheric scientist. Matthew, that's kind of meaningless to most people listening, that conversation. But can you try and make sense of what that conversation was about? Oh, sorry, we don't have Matthew. We have Peter Labasse, though. Peter Labasse is the CEO of Labasse International Air Charter. Peter, I'll ask you the same question I was about to put to Matthew. Can you try and, as an expert, make sense of what that conversation was? What was happening there? What went wrong?
Well, it's a sort of a strange scenario. There is a system, an ADSB system. It's the automatic defendants surveillance broadcast that is a requirement since 2020 on all private and commercial aircraft. And that allows the commercial aircraft to visually see under avionics aircraft around it. We're not sure at this point if the Black Hawk actually had that turned on or not, which is one thing. Secondly, the aircraft coming in, it has a system as well called TCAS, and TCAS is traffic collision avoidance system, but it shuts down under 1,000 foot simply because under 1,000 foot you wouldn't have the same reaction to move. You're committed to come into that landing or divert, do a running around, as we call it. At 300 foot from the ground, the pilots are all committed to land. Everything is going the right direction. They're not going to see a helicopter to their left or to their right below them. They're not going to have that visibility. And even if they did, they wouldn't have the time. You don't just swerve out of the way to get away from that helicopter. So I think the question, certainly the question is not on the pilots of the commercial aircraft, but it is on the training flight of the Black Hawk. Not sure. They were also crossing the river. So a river's a dark area. There's no lights on a river. They were asked, did you see the CRJ? Do you have it in sight? And they did not reply. And then air traffic control said, go behind the CRJ. So for whatever reason, they missed that communication. And for whatever reason, going behind it didn't actually work. So that's where we're at.
Oh, I would have imagined that there would have been kind of an area around a big commercial airport like this, wherein other operators, be it the military or somebody else, just doesn't kind of ingress. They don't go there. It's kind of, it's out of bounds, as it were. Would that not normally be the case?
I mean, this is a very busy area. It's a very military heavy area. It's Blackhawks are very common in these areas. They've worked side by side for many years. I would say that the onus is the helicopter.
Okay.
The issue there is, you know, what was the training? Did they have night vision glasses on? Did that impair the vision? Obviously, when you've got night vision glasses on, if you've any lights, it becomes very, very bright, so you can't actually see. So it's going to unfold as the NTSB look at this, but it's a very, very tragic event to happen.
In a situation like this, I mean, that there's kind of competing narratives emerging and nobody knows entirely yet what happened. And we will eventually, one would suspect, they'll be able to piece it together. But there's kind of some speculation that they were maybe looking at the wrong plane in the helicopter, that it's so busy that kind of they were doing it by eyesight rather than by machine, if that makes sense.
It was. The pilots were coming in on visual landing, so they were looking at the runway ahead of them as well. Quite possibly, as I say, we don't know the extent of the training. We don't know there was three people on board. We don't know the experience of the pilots on board. It's definitely definitely an issue where the military are going to be looking at their training and what went wrong there and why they were so close to an active runway. Now, there was one other factor that the runway 01 was the original selected runway by the ATC for the commercial aircraft, and then it was changed to runway 33. That may have had a factor, but it's not really. It wasn't a very last second sort of change. It was just quite a common occurrence.
Do Blackhawks, do helicopters like this, do they have black boxes in the same way that airlines do in terms of piecing this together?
Yeah, they have all the information saved, as you'd expect. And needless to say, I'm sure there's a lot more information already available to the military, which will come out in time. But, you know, a helicopter has the ability to go in any direction very quickly, as we know. An airplane does not. An airplane is on a glide slope, and it's, you know, it can either descend or ascend. It can't really make sharp turns at 300 foot coming into final approach. So
yeah,
it would either be a go around, which means full power on and they take off again and they go up to into the pattern and then come in and have a second shot at it. But they didn't even have the opportunity to do this. This just literally came out of nowhere.
Victoria Jones is still with us. Victoria, as I said, Donald Trump speaking at the moment. We're all searching for answers after this crash. He has said, I know he took to Truth Social last night and was very quick to point the finger as his wont. What has been the official reaction to this from him, from transport secretaries, from others in the States?
Well, the official reaction, from Trump started off by saying, you know, well, in fact, inaccurate information, saying, you know, why didn't the air traffic controllers, you know, give orders to them? And then, of course, he was briefed or he found out, but he spoke precipitously because they had given orders to both sides on what to do. So he was completely wrong and ascribing blame where he probably should not have done. So he's sort of walking that back. So there's a fair amount of walking back. The army is being very circumspect. So we don't know what I said earlier about night vision goggles and the army officials saying that. That was an anonymous person, so we don't know. Everybody's expressing condolences and all this kind of stuff, but people are being extremely careful right now. And one important fact here is that Reagan National Airport is extremely crowded with planes. There were at least 8 near mid-air crashes last year alone. And members of Congress are constantly lobbying for more flights out of Reagan National, largely because they want direct flights home from Reagan National. It's the most convenient airport for them. In fact, this flight to Wichita, Kansas, was only added last year at the request of the member of Congress for that district.
Listen, all of this will come out in the wash over the next few hours, next few days. I mentioned Donald Trump speaking at the moment. Here's a little bit of what he has had to say.
Our new Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, his second day on the job. When that happened, it's a rough one. We'll be working tirelessly. He's a great gentleman. The whole group is, these are great people. And they are working tirelessly to figure out exactly what happened. We will state certain opinions, however. I'm also immediately appointing an acting commissioner to the FAA, Christopher Rocheleau, a 22-year veteran of the agency, highly respected. Christopher, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We must have only the highest standards for those who work in our aviation system. I changed the Obama standards from very mediocre at best to extraordinary. You remember that. Only the highest aptitude, they have to be the highest intellect and psychologically superior people, were allowed to qualify for air traffic controllers. That was not so prior to getting there. When I arrived in 2016, I made that change very early on because I always felt this was a job that, and other jobs too, but this was a job that had to be superior intelligence.
He's remarkable, really, isn't he? Absolutely. I was wondering how long it would take for him to make it about himself. Anyway, that is what he has had to say in the last few minutes. We will have continued updates right throughout the evening on this as more detail emerges. Victoria Jones is the Chief Washington Analyst at DC Radio Company. Victoria, thank you for your time. Peter Labat is the CEO of Labat International Air Charter. Peter, thank you as well. And the investigations continuing into how this awful air tragedy occurred. Matthew Cappucci is with me. He's a senior meteorologist and atmospheric scientist. Matthew, what's the latest in terms of kind of the early picture emerging as to how this happened?
Well, we know about a third of the aircraft landing at Reagan National Airport last night local time were using runway 33. Runway 33 is a shorter runway. It's 5,000 feet compared to the longer one, which is 7,000 feet. And it's more commonly used by smaller aircraft that are like the two-seat by two-seat ones compared to the three-seat by three-seat ones. That was the case last night. And so this aircraft that was landing, flight 5342, was on a standard path. It was cleared to land, and it was doing everything it was supposed to do. What appears to have happened is that the helicopter had requested to maintain visual separation. Basically, they said to air traffic controllers, you know, we're going to look around, we're going to see what's around us, and proceed with caution. And the air traffic controllers said, just make sure, you know, there's this CRJ, this regional jet coming through, let them go, and then pass behind them. Given the fact there was a collision, it raises the question, were the folks in the helicopter, piloting the helicopter, looking at the wrong plane and mistakenly proceeding without having realized that they were on the path of an approaching plane? In other words, did they just look at the wrong plane and misidentify it as receding?
And I mean, for that to happen, this would have to be a very, very busy part of the country in terms of air traffic. I assume that is the case, though. This is one of the busier parts, is it?
Yes, this is one of the busiest places in the country and really the world. You have not only a convoluted series of flight restrictions, given the president lives nearby, and of course there has to be national security in D.C. You can't fly over the Pentagon, can't fly over the White House, etc. But at the same time, you have military operations, you have Reagan National Airport, you have neighborhoods nearby that don't want planes flying directly over them. It's like a 3D labyrinth, if you will, and it just complicates things so much for air traffic control. There have been times I've taken off at Reagan National Airport, looked out the window, and seen helicopters eye level with me. Of course, on the other side of the river, a few hundred feet, 1,000 feet away, you wouldn't see that at other airports across the country in the United States. And so if you keep sort of taxing a system with more inputs and more moving parts, no matter how good the people are who are running things, there are more variables and the odds of something happening do increase. That's just a simple math rule.
You have to kind of forgive the naivety of this question, Matthew, but I would have imagined that, you know, despite the fact that the pilots in the helicopter requested permission to kind of proceed by kind of means of eyesight, as it were, you know, we'll have a look around and we'll proceed with caution. I would have thought there would have been systems on board that kind of alarms would have gone to said, here, you're precariously close to another aircraft.
Yeah, so that's actually a really good point. That's not naive at all. You know, there are these things called TCAS systems, or essentially traffic control or traffic collision avoidance systems that aircraft have. And they're in every commercial airplane. So let's say, for example, there are two airplanes that are too close and the pilots don't notice and air traffic control doesn't notice. These systems would basically get close to each other and talk to each other and alert the pilots and say, hey, traffic nearby. And if the pilots don't respond after a moment or two, they'll go even further and say, you know, pilot one up or pilot two down as a last resort. And that has saved so many collisions in you know, years of its use. The question is, did the military aircraft have one? And were these two aircraft at this point so low that the systems had disengaged? Because when you're that low, I mean, you're only 300 feet above the ground. By then, was it so far into its landing that the system was not actively being used? It's impossible to know. These are questions that the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Bureau, will be investigating. But for the time being, you raise a really good point.
Yeah, listen, Matthew, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. Matthew Cappucci is a senior meteorologist and atmospheric scientist. Abadi Ismail is with us as well, who witnessed this awful tragedy with his own eyes. Abadi, thank you for joining us. Can you talk us through what you saw happening?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time. Basically, somewhere around 8:50 p.m. last night, I was getting ready to go to bed when I heard a loud bang bang right outside my window. I have a panoramic cinematic view of the Potomac River and also the Anacostia River, Reagan Airport, and the military base. So it was easy to look at the window and take a look and see what's happening. I had a goosebumps. I was so worried because this is not like anything I've heard in my life. This is more like something I heard on a movie setting, something I heard in a war zone. Definitely not unusual sound. So my first thinking was, maybe it's an exercise drill at the military base. Maybe it's maybe something with the power plant down the river. Could be anything, but not even in my wildest dream have I ever thought that's a plane collided with a helicopter, military helicopter. And to answer the military helicopter, was the military helicopter, you know, loaded with missiles? Maybe that's why I hear the explosion so loud. There's so many questions and very little answers.
When you heard the explosion and you rush to the window, I assume you look at what could you see?
Smoke. Immediately smoke. It was 8:50 p.m. I saw smokes, but again, it was hard to kind of have a conclusive answer at that moment. What's really happening outside? So it's dark. The water temperature is about 39 degrees Fahrenheit. Hard to have a conclusive answer at that point. So I didn't know what to think at that point. So shortly after, I decided to take some videos and share it with social media. And the reports have come up that it was actually indeed a plane crashed with a helicopter. So at that moment, I was able to see all of the DC resources from DC police, DC PD, the DC Park, the US Coast Guard, Arlington Police. All of their resources have been deployed to the crash scene. So you have the east side of the river where the crash site is, and you have the west side of the river where the Reagan Airport is, and a lot, heavy, heavy traffic of fire trucks on that side. Yeah, so to give you a perspective just about the conditions on the water, when we talk about 39 degrees, this has been the case since the inaugurational week. Frozen river since then. And so airboats have been launched to go and maneuver through all of these ice. And to make it even worse, we have a very, I know this river very well because I'm a U.S. Coast Guard master captain. So there is a very, what we call it, a strong current going south stream. So to give you that perspective, once the plane crashed, it crashed on the deep side of the river, about 24, 25 feet depth. You think maybe there is some sort of like every hour delay, there should be some sort of like increasing the search and rescue mission from a mile radius to 2 mile radius to even more, because the current will drag you down the river south stream. So that's also an idea to think about. They have only recovered so far about 20-ish bodies so far. So my thinking is there are definitely some bodies that floated down the river, a south stream into the Maryland side. Possibly.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, listen, it must have been an awful thing to see, Abadi. So thank you for sharing that with us. Abadi Ismail, an eyewitness to this crash. Eric Jones is with me. Eric is a professor and associate dean of the Department of Aviation at Lewis University. Eric, what is your understanding of what happened, given the small little bits of information we currently have?
Well, it's great to be with you, Kieran. And I think your colleague did a really good job of illustrating the facts that we have currently, in this investigation. I also want to be mindful that, that these are human lives that were lost, and the people that lost loved ones. I just want to reiterate that my thoughts and prayers clearly go out to them. And, having worked in the aviation community for many years, Kiernan, this is a difficult time for individuals that work in this career. We spend a great deal of our bandwidth making sure that these airplanes land safely and passengers get from point A to point B successfully. So, I think Matt's analysis was very, very good. You had two airplanes seemingly on talking to each other. ATC was involved. It seemed like a normal approach, in spite of the added difficulty of flying into a Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C. It is a very common destination for pilots and a very common destination for commercial aviators. There is a little bit more complexity to that, but nothing above what either of these, either the Black Hawk or the CRJ-700, would be used to dealing with on a daily basis.
Would there ever be kind of a bit of territorialism that goes on between civil aviation authorities and the military? I mean, how openly do they tend to talk to each other in situations like that?
That's a great question, Kieran. And it is a safety first mentality. It is a communicate, aviate, navigate is the term that we use when there's issues like this. And what I mean by that is you want to be hyper communicative. You want to be saying exactly where that airplane that you're supposed to have a visual on, where that airplane is at all times. The military does have different criteria that they have to meet. However, those airplanes working in close proximity to each other is very, very common. Commercial airplanes tend not to land as much at military bases as military airplanes land at civilian bases, but the cross-pollination of both of those aircraft is very common.
All right. Well, listen, more details will emerge throughout the evening and over the next few days. We'll bring it to you here. Eric, thank you. Eric Jones is a professor and associate dean at the Department of Aviation at Lewis University. I'm joined, as I am this time every week, by Jeff Cooner, host of the Cooner Report on WRKO AM 680 Radio in Boston, Massachusetts. Jeff is liberalism's worst nightmare, a conservative nationalist who champions God, country and family. Jeff, you're welcome to the show as always. Very sad news you guys have been dealing with late last night and through this morning.
It's really heartbreaking, Kieran. And as always, it's great to be with you and your wonderful audience. There was a massive collision right near Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C., right over the Potomac River. And here is the latest that, at least according to law enforcement and media, that we're hearing. A flight from Wichita, Kansas, 64 people on board, 60 passengers, 4 crew members. That flight, as it descended into Reagan Airport, and apparently it was on a standard pattern. So the flight crew was a professional flight crew, experienced. They were given the right coordinates. They were coming in for a landing about 400 feet above the ground, and inexplicably, it collided with a Black Hawk military helicopter. There was a massive explosion. Everybody is now confirmed dead. There were 3 crew members on the Black Hawk helicopter. 67 people are dead. They've recovered 30 dead bodies out of the Potomac River. They don't know if they can recover all of them. They're going to try to recover every single one of them. But it is an absolute disaster. And what's also really troubling to many people is this Black Hawk helicopter crew, again, highly experienced. They were on an annual mission, a training mission that they do all the time. There's a big military base nearby. You have the Pentagon, obviously, in Washington. A lot of helicopters. I've flown in and out of Reagan when I was at the Washington Times for 10 years. It is highly congested, very compact. You do see a lot of planes. You do see a lot of helicopters. What is inexplicable is why this helicopter veered onto the path of the American Airlines. And what they're now, this is the latest theory, and I think it could be right. If you look at the video, there are actually not one, but two planes right near the Black Hawk helicopter. One slightly above, and the other one that eventually crashed right in it at the same elevation. Air traffic controllers were telling the pilots on the Black Hawk helicopter, do you see the CRJ, which is the plane that eventually hit him? And they said, yes, we have a visual, meaning, you know, we confirm it. But it appears that they thought they were looking at the plane above them. So they thought, well, we're fine. We're underneath the plane. They did not see the other plane coming right at him from the side. And that's why now there's 67 dead. It appears there was a miscommunication. It appears there was pilot error. It appears there was human error. And now we've got 67 dead.
Yeah, listen, it's really awful for everybody and their families involved with the crash. And we've been speaking to different experts, Jeff, and a lot of them kind of seem to be agreeing with you there that's the narrative that's emerging, that they kind of were doing this, you know, by visuals, literally kind of looking out the window. They saw one plane, thought that's the plane that air traffic control were talking about, when it was a different plane. I was kind of amazed, though, that, you know, when I get into my car, it tells me if there's a car in front of me or it looks like I'm going to hit another car, it'll slam on the brakes. You know, that you would have a kind of a Black Hawk helicopter and a passenger jet in that close proximity. And they're not systems that are kind of screaming alarms at each other saying, you know, move, move.
And you nailed it. I mean, that's what's so inexplicable about this. And look, Kieran, I'm going to be very candid with you. We've had now for years, and it wasn't just this time, we've had for years, air traffic controller whistleblowers who have been coming out and saying there are so many near misses, not just at Reagan, although Reagan there was a lot, but at airports across the country. They said a massive air collision or accident is inevitable. The technology is outdated. They don't have enough air traffic controllers. The Reagan in particular, I got to say this, there's too many planes coming in. There just is. There's too many helicopters. There's too much air traffic in such a tight, compact space. When I fly in and out, and I still do once in a while, you can see planes below you. You can see planes above you. And you're like, you got 40, 50, 60 planes all converging within a 5-10 minute span. There's too much air traffic. And the reason why there's too much air traffic is because for the sake of convenience, nobody wants to fly to Dulles, which is about 45 minutes away. So they go, well, let's all fly into Reagan. But no one's asking the question, can Reagan absorb and handle in such a tight area with so much security that is so highly regulated? And it's not just that you have military helicopters. You've got federal agency helicopters and planes flying. You've got Marine One flying. So you've got all this action going on above a very small airport with a ton of planes coming in. They put convenience ahead of human life and what was prudent. And so what I hope they do after this is, A, get better technology, modernize, hire more air traffic controllers, and above all, why do we need so many planes? Kieran, I remember after 9/11, I was in D.C. Reagan was literally shut down for over a year. You couldn't get a plane in or out. And then they loosened it a little bit more and loosened it a little bit more. And okay, fine, it can handle some air traffic, but it's now one of the most trafficked airports in the world. And so the system is overwhelmed. And again, you mentioned earlier, teasing a story, people before profits. It's time we start putting people before profits in this country, because we've got 67 people dead.
And Donald Trump gave this press conference. It started a little over an hour ago. And as is his wont, he kind of spoke for quite a time and was taking questions as well. This is just a little bit of that press conference where he talked about what he thought one of the issues might have been.
Well, the Federal Aviation Administration, this was before I
got to office recently, second term. The FAA is actively recruiting workers who suffer severe intellectual disabilities, psychiatric problems, and other mental and physical conditions under a diversity and inclusion hiring initiative spelled out on the agency's website. Can you imagine?
Jeff, he can't help himself.
Well, I mean, Kieran, look, I'll be frank. I don't think DEI caused this. I don't. I don't think there's any evidence. So I think on that, he's wrong. But I got to tell you, the FAA under Pete Buttigieg, in all fairness, he was the worst transportation secretary we ever had. And one of the reasons, we had train derailments. We had ships smashing into bridges. We had Boeing planes literally falling out of the sky. And one of the reasons is they placed this emphasis on diversity, equity, inclusion. And it wasn't just for air traffic controllers. They've done it in medical schools. They've done it in police departments, fire departments, the military. And as I've often said, DEI equals DIE. It equals DIE. Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to force quotas. They want to hit a certain percentage of each perceived minority segment of the population. And in order to achieve these so-called quotas in the name of equity and diversity, they are dramatically lowering standards. Now, it doesn't mean that was in this case.
Yeah, it was a bit crass of him, wasn't it, to bring it up in this case. He's an issue at diversity and inclusion. We know that. And there's going to be a rollback, one would imagine, on all of that over the next few years. And there'll be legal challenges. I'm sure put it this way, you and I will be talking about it again. But to bring it up in that press conference when people are desperate to know what might have caused this, I felt that was a bit uncalled for, wasn't it?
Well, look, I'll be honest with you. I think he's going to get blowback on that because there's no evidence. Now, if he had evidence that, hey, they had this guy hired as an air traffic controller or as the pilot of the helicopter, the Black Hawk, that's a different story. So that's his problem. He's got an overall good point, but now is not the time to do it. And when Biden played politics with tragedies, people hated it. You play politics with tragedies, people aren't going to like it. So look, to me, in the end, this is why we need to stop putting profits before people. Fly to Dulles Airport. It's a little farther. It costs you a little more money. It's a little more inconvenient. But you're not going to have 67 people dead.
Listen, before I let you go, Jeff, we are tight on time, so kind of this is the only question I'd ask you on it. I mean, these hearings are ongoing to confirm all of Donald Trump's picks to different agencies and different positions within cabinet, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. the focus yesterday. What was your sense of how that went?
Well, I think he handled himself well. I think he will be confirmed. The Democrats went after him very, very hard. Where they made a mistake, I think they could have hurt him and bloodied him had they really made the issue about vaccines and some of his comments about vaccines. But instead, what they did was they went very personal. They went on about his cousin, Caroline Kennedy, calling him a dark, evil man. They went on about some comments that he made that they deliberately took out of context. They went on about his heroin addiction over 40 years ago. So what they ended up doing is they ended up making him seem more sympathetic. And I think what the Democrats don't understand is that the American public, in the wake of COVID, in the wake of the deliberate lies that we were told by Fauci and others, for example, that the jab was 100% effective. It wasn't. That the jab would prevent the COVID from spreading. It didn't. That there were no adverse side effects whatsoever. For some people, there were. They made up this 6 feet distancing rule that they admitted later on was completely manufactured out of thin air. So there is this low trust in the medical establishment. And that's why there's sympathy for Robert F. Kennedy. Had they gone on the vaccine issue, I think they could have drawn blood. Instead, they went over the top. They launched personal attack after personal attack. And unless something big develops in the next 24 to 48 hours, he will be the next HHS secretary.
Jeff, we'll talk to you at the same time next week. Jeff Kooner is host of the Kooner Report on WRKO AM 680 Radio, Boston, Massachusetts.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.